The U.S. Supreme Court struck down a prohibition on the registration of scandalous and immoral trademarks. UNH Law Dean Megan Carpenter joins me to discuss. This is the UNH Law Podcast. Learn more about the law school and apply by visiting law.unh.edu. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or host and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire. So, Dean Carpenter, what was Eric Brunetti attempting to register and why was it denied by the USPTO?
Well, first, I think I need to know how you want to handle language that could be construed as inappropriate.
I will hit that explicit button. We're good to go.
I don't think I've ever been deemed before, so this will be exciting. Trademark law is more or less a consumer protection device, right, and it prevents consumers from being confused or deceived as to the source of particular goods and services. There are these particular provisions in the Lanham Act that have been there for a long time, though, that also prohibit registration of trademarks that are offensive in some kind of way. There are two kind of prongs to that. One is marks that might disparage individuals or groups. And then another are marks that are scandalous and immoral. Mm-hmm. And typically, I don't think those two terms, scandalous and immoral, have ever really been broken out for analysis separately.
Right, they kind of mean the same thing, just generally speaking.
Yeah, or maybe it's that immoral is really difficult to define, so it's just been lumped into scandalous. So
it's kind of time and culture based. It's not just a general thing that means the same thing across the world.
Exactly, which is part of the problem overall. So we had these sort of two provisions within Section 2 of the Lanham Act that were kind of unlike some of the other prohibitions on registration. The other ones are like things that might confuse consumers or deceive consumers. So in 2017, the Supreme Court struck down the disparagement provision on the basis that it constituted viewpoint discrimination in violation of the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, essentially you can say nice things about an individual or a group, but you couldn't say negative things about an individual or group in the context of a trademark registration.
What case was that?
That case was Mattel versus Tam.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Really, it came about because Simon Tam, who is kind of the front man of the band The Slants, which is an Asian American rock band, tried to register the name The Slants with the USPTO and was rejected on the basis that the term might disparage people of Asian descent. You know, a little ironically, in that case, the band is comprised of people of Asian descent and they work very passionately about issues of social justice with regard to the Asian American community. So in 2017, the Supreme Court struck down the disparagement provision based on viewpoint discrimination, which really set the stage for this case to come about. Brunetti was working its way through the courts as well at the time. And the way sort of the setup there, I think, is that, you know, Eric Brunetti started a streetwear company in the early 90s, 1990.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that far back.
Yeah. And that's really relevant because he started it with a professional skateboarder. And back then, it wasn't very common, as it is now, to have kind of, you know, flipped corporate logos, to have, you know, something that says, you know, maybe you have a t-shirt with golden arches, and in the golden arches, instead of saying McDonald's, it says McShit.
And you see it constantly nowadays with Supreme being reworked by every possible YouTuber or influencer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, Starbucks has been, you know, the subject of a lot of this kind of corporate logo flipping, but he was really one of the first people to do it, if not the first. And his brand, which is FUCT, that brand really became known for it. One of the most common pieces of lines of merchandise had the Ford logo, you know, with kind of the royal blue background and the script in white, with the logo of the streetwear brand rather than Ford. And so as his label got popular in kind of the skating and punk communities, Even Dave Grohl of Nirvana was wearing some fucked streetwear in publicity photos and things like that. It started to be copied, and and he became concerned and ended up filing to register the trademark of the brand. It was rejected on the basis that it was scandalous and immoral. Went up to the Fed Circuit, and at the Federal Circuit, the court said, you know, yes, there's enough evidence to show that a substantial composite would of the general public would see this as scandalous or immoral, but that the overall provision of prohibiting registration of trademarks on the basis of scandalousness violated the First Amendment because it constituted viewpoint discrimination.
How old is the Lanham Act?
The Lanham Act is about 70-ish years old
Wow.
But this particular provision preventing scandalous and immoral marks from being registered has been in existence even predating the Lanham Act. So it came in at the really just after the turn of the century in 1905 or so.
How has it made it until Mattel v. Tam and now Brunetti for it to still be in existence? I'm shocked it made it through the 80s and 90s, for example.
Yeah, well, you know, there were a lot of sort of moral issues with regard to artistic works going on in the 1980s,
yeah,
for sure.
Especially the music end of things.
But I think that, you know, when you think about, you know, Congress and the courts, it's a difficult sell in a way to say, you know, we want to put more vulgarity or more offensiveness back into the trademark registration scheme.
What's kind of shocking to me about the makeup of the Supreme Court and this still making it through, I mean, it's unusual that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and two justices that President Trump nominated managed to agree on something like this. I mean, has the makeup of the court had an impact on this decision?
That's a really great question. And I think that the justices during oral argument were really all over the place. Mm-hmm. One thing that became very clear during the context of the oral arguments is that nobody liked the provision as it has been applied over time. Mm-hmm. There have been so many inconsistencies. My research in particular has kind of done, I've done a deep dive empirical study into many of these decisions. And you see marks that are, you know, contain the same terms that have been registered and then, you know, half of them have been rejected. It really depends on the way that the trademark examiner looks at it at a given moment, and, you know, looking at it with varying degrees of context. So, you know, marks with queer in them, for example, some registered, some rejected. MILF as an acronym, registered and rejected. And you see that with, you know, really across the board. There's some interesting marks even involving, you know, the fuck that in that, you know, are have both been registered and rejected. We have an interesting case where someone applied to register A-hole's guide to chicks or something. I don't know. A-hole's guide to something. And those were rejected based on the idea that, okay, so you said a-hole, but we all really know what you meant.
We know the implications.
Right, right. On the other hand, there have been marks registered that had effin' this or effin' that, saying that, okay, so we know what they're referring to and it's an offensive term, but they're using a less offensive version of it. So, you know, relevant too to the case in, you know, the Brunetti case is that we had, you know, FCUK, which had been registered, and FUCT then rejected.
Wow, that's really confusing.
It is. And you can see, you know, very interesting all the different rationales that applicants come up with. So yeah, FCUK is supposed to stand for French Connection in the UK.
Oh.
But how consumers perceive it is really what matters in trademark law.
Do examiners need to state why exactly they denied it so that they have some point of reference if it goes to appeals?
They do. They do. But generally, it's a pretty cursory analysis. And many of the office action responses is what they're called, end up looking very similar.
Do you expect further cases or changes coming down the pike for the Lanham Act, or at least how the USPTO handles these sort of obscene or immoral or going forward?
One of the things that the judges were, that Justice Sotomayor was particularly worried about is, you know, this idea of kind of a rush to register all kinds of offensive right. trademarks. Justice Breyer expressed that concern as well. And I think both of them would have separated out for the first time, scandalous and immoral, and said, let's get rid of this immoral piece of right. the Lanham Act that really doesn't have any relevance. And let's focus on scandalous and make it maybe a higher bar, more akin to obscenity, mm-hmm. Which would survive a viewpoint discrimination challenge. That's not the approach that the court took. So right now, you know, it was a facial challenge and the provision has been totally struck down. So we have yet to see whether or not we're going to have, you know, ultimately an abundance of offensiveness or, you know, what Justice Alito called some kind of the coarseness of our society increasing. But it's possible that Congress could step in, and certainly the stage has been set for that to be the next step.
Thanks for listening to the UNH Law Podcast. Learn more about us by visiting law.unh.edu or following UNH Law on social media. Be sure to comment and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Spotify. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or host and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire.